Good morning, everyone, and Shavua Tov. Today's parak of Rambam is the second parak of Hilchos Avodos Kochavim, in which the Rambam will detail all the different prohibitions which relate to strain after Avodos Kochavim. In the beginning, we will now see how necessary it was for the Rambam to give us the historical backdrop he did in the first parak, based off of how he starts parak base. Halacha Aleph. Ikra tzivoy b'avodos kochavim shelo la'avod echad mikol ha'bruim lo malach v'lo galgo v'lo kocha v'lo echad mi'arba yisodos v'lo echad mikol ha'nivra'a mehen. The foundational command against idolatry is that one should not serve a single one of the created entities. Not an angel, not one of the celestial spheres, not a star, not one of the four medieval elements, not anything which is created from them. Nothing. V'afal pisha oved yodei she'Hashem hu elokim v'hu oved ha'nivra hazeh al derech she'avad enosh v'anshei doro t'chila harei zeh oved kochavim. And even if the idolater knows that God exists and runs the world and is the creator, etc., etc., and he simply serves one of these created entities in the way that Enosh and his generation had mistakenly done so, as we saw in the previous parak, they had initially thought that it would be fitting to serve these entities because, after all, God had given them such great honor, and therefore it would be fitting for us to give them honor as well. Hare zeh oved kochavim. Somebody who does this is still absolutely an idolater. V'inyan zehu she'ezhira Torah alav amra upenti sa'inecha shemaima v'rises ha'shemesh asher chalak Hashem lokecha ozam l'cho amim. And with regards to this, the Torah warns us, kolomar shema tashat be'ein libcha v'tira she'elu heina manhigin es olam v'heim she'cholak Hashem ozam l'cho ha'olam li'os chayim v'hovim v'einam nefsadim k'minhago shel olam v'somar z'roi l'shtachav oslein alav dan. Perhaps you'll look up to the heaven, you'll see the sun, you'll see the celestial beings, and you will think that since Hashem has made them so powerful, Hashem given them such honor in that he made them living in the Rambam's understanding, and yet they exist eternally, they're not declining the way, they don't degenerate the way the rest of the creation does. And you'd think, therefore, that since they've been given such great honor by their creator, we too are supposed to give them honor, and we'll bow to them, and we will serve them. And with regards to this, the Torah warns us, Yishamru lachem, pen niftel levavchem. That you have to be so careful not to fall and mistakenly follow the thinking of your heart that you're supposed to serve these as a go-between, as an in-between between you and your creator. Halacha Beis. Svarim Rabim Chibru Ovnei Kochavim Avodasa Heich Ikra Avodasa Uma Maaseh Mishpateh. There were many books written by the pagans as to how to best serve their idols, how ideally you should serve it, and the various different actions involved, the different laws involved. Tivano Kadosh Baruch Hu Shelo Likros Bosan Svarim Klal V'lo Naharba V'lo B'davar Midvarha. Hashem commanded us not to read those books at all, not to think about them, contemplate them, not a single matter from them. Even to look, to gaze at the image of one of these idols is forbidden. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Al tifnu el elim, don't turn after these false gods. And with regard to this, the Pasuk says as well, perhaps you'll seek out their gods and ask, how do they serve them? You should not seek out how they do their different forms of service, even though you don't intend to serve it. Because by doing so, you will ultimately be led to turn after it. And to do as they do, as the Pasuk says, because ultimately will lead you to say, and I will do this as well. You'll be attracted by it. You'll want to follow their culture, and you will be led astray. Halacha Gimel. And all these different prohibitions, the ones the Rambam has thus far listed, as well as the ones he will now list, are all with one common theme. And that is that a person should not turn after in his thoughts, in his mind, after idolatry. And anybody who does turn after idolatry in a way in which he does an action, for example, he takes one of their books and he studies it, such a person can have the court administer lashes to him. And it's not simply actual idol worship, which is forbidden for a person to turn after in his thoughts. El kol machsheva shehu gorim lo la'adam lakor ikr me'ikori ha'torah, muzharin anu shelo alosa al libenu, v'lo nasiach datenu lekach, v'nachshov v'nimashich achar hirhori ha'lev. But any thought which will cause a person to ultimately uproot one of the foundations of the Torah, we are forbidden from having arise in our thoughts to allow ourselves to contemplate it, to distract ourselves with it, and ultimately be drawn after it. Because a person's mind ultimately has limits, and not everybody is going to reach the truth in its proper clarity. And if every person decides that he'll follow his own thoughts to their logical conclusions, which might not be all that logical, he'll end up destroying the world in the weakness of his mind. Ketzad, the Rambam is going to illustrate. Sometimes he's going to investigate after idolatry, and sometimes he'll think about Hashem's unity. Maybe it exists, maybe it doesn't. Malu malu, malu mata, malu nim, malu achor. What is all the way above? What is all the way below? What was before all of creation? What will be at the end of the world? Maybe he'll think sometimes prophecy is real. Maybe it's not. Sometimes he'll think about the Torah itself. Maybe it's divine. Maybe it's not. And he doesn't understand the proper principles, the philosophical principles of how to investigate these matters, to the point where he would then have understood everything clearly. And ultimately, he'll come out to deny God. He'll deny the foundations of our religion. And because of this, the Torah warned with the following, as we say every day in Shema. Every individual shouldn't just follow after his thoughts, which ultimately are not all that rigorous, not all that philosophically trained, and think that he's reaching the truth. That if you follow after your heart, this refers to denying of Torah essentials. And after your eyes, that refers to immorality. And ultimately, this particular Los, I say this prohibition, even though it can cause somebody to lose his share in the world to come, nonetheless, Ein Bo Malchus, even though it's so severe, since it doesn't have an action associated with it, the court cannot administer lashes. Halacha Dalet. Mitzvahs Avodas Chachamim Kenegan Mitzvahs Kulanhi. The prohibition against idolatry is so severe that it's equal in weight to the entirety of the other mitzvahs. Shneimar v'chiseskuv lo sasu eitz kol ha-mitzvos v'gomer. Pasuk in Parshas Shelach, which is a bit enigmatic. M'pi ha-shmu alamdu she'avodas chachamim ha-kasam adaver. And Chazal taught us that this pasuk is referring to the prohibition of idolatry, and it says it's opposite all the mitzvos. Ha-lamartha she'kol ha-mod avodas chachamim kofer b'chol ha-Torah kula. We derive from here that anybody who gives credence to idolatry has denied the entirety of the Torah, and all of the prophets, and everything that had been commanded through prophecy all the way back from Adam HaRishon until the end of the world. Everything that Hashem has commanded ever, you have denied by serving idolatry. Anybody who denies idolatry, on the flip side, he's established, he's admitted to, he's given credence to the entirety of the Torah, and all the prophets, everything that's been commanded through them, all the way back from Adam HaRishon through the end of the world, and that's the foundation of all the different mitzvos. A Jew who unfortunately has served idolatry, he's considered like a pagan, like a non-Jew, with all of his matters. He's not like a Jew who's simply done a very heinous crime, a crime which would have required the harshest punishment of stoning. Somebody who's rebelled, who's become attached to the sin of idolatry, he is considered as if he's denied all of the Torah, as we've said before. And also the deniers from amongst the Bnei Yisrael, they are not considered like a Jew with regards to anything. And we don't accept them back into the community ever. They will never make their way back. And who count as these type of deniers, these apikorsim? They are those that follow after their thoughts, as the Rambam had explained earlier, in the foolishness of their minds. They think that they know what they're doing in their philosophical speculations, and they don't know the ways of accurate, true philosophical speculation, and they end up destroying the world, as the Rambam said beforehand. And in their arrogance, in their foolishness, they end up sinning and think that there is no sin. So such people are not considered as members of Bnei Israel. Now let's be clear, when the Rambam says somebody who's a mumer levot chavim or an apikoros is not a member of Klai Israel, what he means to say very clearly, it's borne out from many other places, is that this individual does not have all the positives of being a member of Klai Israel. For example, one of the simplest ways of putting things is that we consider them a non-Jew in terms of the degree to which we would trust them. We would not assume that they can be believable in many different areas. It does not mean that they are not obligated still in all the mitzvahs. They are absolutely still Jewish. You cannot convert out of Judaism, as it were. You still are always a Jew in that sense. And it's forbidden to speak with these apikorsim, these deniers, and to respond to them even. Don't even come close to the house of idolatry. And the default thought, the intent of somebody who's one of these deniers, one of these heretics, is for the sake of idolatry. And that is what I was alluding to beforehand. One of the outcomes of him being considered a non-Jew is that, let's say he writes a Sefer Torah, as we saw in Hilchos Sirei Torah. If he writes a Sefer Torah, even though he wrote God's name, he wrote Yud Kei and then Vav Kei, nonetheless, it doesn't have Kedusha in it. In fact, it has the opposite infused in that Sefer Torah, as we saw in Hilchos Sirei Torah, must be burned, because we assume their default thinking, their intentions are for nefarious purposes, for idolatry. Halacha Vav. Anybody who gives credence to, he admits to the legitimacy of idolatry, he says that it's true, even though he didn't actually serve it, nonetheless, he's already blasphemed, he's degraded God in the worst fashion. That these two are considered equatable, whether you actually act in this high-handed fashion and you serve Avodah Zarah, or simply you speak in a way against God, which you blasphemed him, so they are considered comparable. Therefore, these two sins uniquely, after the individual has been executed by the court that with the harshest of punishments, which is stoning, so then we hang their corpse for a day, which the halachos are detailed elsewhere in Mishnah Torah at the very end. And the Rambam therefore now will turn to the next part of his discussion, which is to discuss the halachos of a blasphemer, of somebody who, as we will see, says the most heinous things about God. And then in that situation, since he has the same status as somebody who has served idolatry, the Rambam has grouped the halachos over here. Halacha Zayin. And these are the halachos which relate to somebody who blasphemes God. Exactly what it counts as blaspheming and how we have to respond. How does one blaspheme God in the way that they will be obligated to be stoned by the court? It's when they enunciate God's specific name, the special name of Ado Shem, the Aleph Dalet Nun Yud name, and they curse it with one of the other names we had seen before. There were seven names which are not allowed to be erased in Hilchos Yisurei Torah, and he uses one of those names in order to curse this holy name, this unique name. Now, V'yesh Mishem Mefarish She'eno Chayev Ela Al Shem Yud He, and then the Vav, and then the He. Now, there are those the Rambam mentions who held that it wasn't also Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. It's specifically the name Yud Hey, and then Vav, and Hey, as it would be pronounced, that is liable for this terrible punishment. Va'niomer, but the Rambam tells us again, he reiterates that he holds She'al Shneim Hu Nisko, that either on Yud Hey and then Vav Hey, or Aleph Dalet and then Nun Yud, he thinks either one of those are significant enough that if somebody blasphemes by using one of the seven names, which is not Nimchakin, which these are two of, so if somebody uses one of these names against God by saying, for example, as we will see, that let's say Elohim should, Rahman and Salam, they said this, should strike, let's say, Yud, Hey, and then Vav, Hey, so then that counts as blaspheming, and one would be obligated to be stoned by the court. Halacha Ches. As harsh as Gadif Minayin. How do we know that there is a prohibition with regards to blaspheming? Shneimar says, Elohim lo tekalel. Pasuk is referring to a judge, he should not be cursed, but it also, of course, applies to the real Elohim, to Hashem himself, and he cannot be cursed either. Now, when we're actually doing the court procedure, what we do is all day long, we don't actually want to say this blasphemy more than necessary. So when the witnesses are telling us over that which they said, we say that the witnesses use this euphemism of saying Yossi should strike Yossi, should hit Yossi. In other words, they curse using that other name to stand in as a variable for God's name. Nigmar Hadin, once the sentence has been sentenced, then that this individual is indeed a blasphemer, so then we have to kill him. Motzin es kol adam lachot, we send everybody out of the courtroom, v'sholem es ha-gadol shaveidim, and we ask the elder, the more prominent of the two witnesses, v'omrim lo, we say to him, emor ma'ashe shamata b'feirish. Okay, so now it's a matter of we need you to actually say it, what you say you heard. We need you to actually pronounce it so you can have real testimony. V'hu omer, and then he says, Rahman al-Tzalam, that which he heard. He uses Hashem's actual names, and that which he heard. V'ayadayonim omdim ha'argleim v'korin v'lom achin. And the judges, upon hearing such blasphemy, must stand and tear their clothing in a way which they will never mend it again. And the second witness doesn't actually repeat it again using the explicit pronunciation of it. Instead, he says, I also heard like him, and that counts as legitimate testimony. And if there were numerous Edom beyond two, each one of them says, yes, I too heard like this, I too heard like this. But they don't, again, pronounce it. We do not want to pronounce this more than we need to. If somebody who had uttered blasphemy retracts it within a very short span of time, which in most realms of halacha, one is able to retract that which they have said within, again, a matter of seconds, ain't no klum, but by blasphemy, it doesn't work. You can't retract it. Once he's uttered that blasphemy, even if he wants to retract it, take it back, rescind what he had said, it's too late. Once he said so in front of witnesses, he will get stoned. Somebody who, Rahman al-Islam, blasphemes God's name by using a different false god that, you know, Baal should, Rahman al-Islam, strike, and then he says Hashem's name. So in that situation, Beis Din doesn't kill him. However, those that are zealous for Hashem can go ahead and strike him and kill him. And if one of these zealots does not go and strike down this person, and then he comes and brings this individual to Beis Din, we are not able to stone him until the point where he used one of those names that we had mentioned earlier. Halacha Yod, final halacha. Anybody who hears this blasphemy is obligated to tear his clothing. And even if he hears only one of those nicknames of God used in the blasphemy, he's obligated to tear his clothing. And this is all assuming he hears it uttered by a Jewish person. And as we saw with the judges, whether you heard it directly yourself or you heard it from somebody who had heard it, so then you are obligated to tear the clothing. However, you heard this blasphemy from a non-Jew, so then you are not obligated to tear your clothing. And in a story in Sefer Malachim, where we have a seeming non-Jew blaspheme God, and then the word gets conveyed back to Chizkiyahu HaMelech, and it's very, very tragic. The reason why Eliakim and Shebna, two of the officials there who had heard it, tore their clothing, even though seemingly he was a non-Jew, is because actually Rav Shaki, the one who had blasphemed there, was once a Jew, technically by birth was a Jew, but had behaved in a way of an idolater, and therefore was a Yisrael Mummer. And therefore, since he was Jewish, when he enunciated this blasphemy, they were obligated to tear. Every one of the witnesses and the judges involved in the court case of a blasphemer places their hands on his head before he's killed. And they say to him, Damcha beroshecha, she'ata garamta lecha. Your blood is on your head. It's not on ours. It's your own fault because you caused this to yourself. And in fact, we don't do this procedure of placing our hands on his head, the judges, the witnesses on his head, and telling him this, except by Megadif. It's only here. It's a special din, specifically by Megadif, that they have this procedure of leaning on him in this way. Overall, this is a really powerful parak, one which drives home the need for humility with regard to the limits of our ability to discern the truth on our own. And thankfully, we have an unbelievably powerful mitzvah with regard to these matters of philosophical inquiry and how to properly engage in it. And by seeking the truth within the proper contours of revelation, by discussing it in the Beis Medrash with Yorei Shemayim and sophisticated Talmidei Chachamim, we will, Emir Tashem, succeed in avoiding being plagued with doubt and mistaken notions of intellectual curiosity, and honestly succeed in following the path of truth. Have a meaningful day, everyone.